If you can give your sales team much higher targets, and if you hit those numbers, then it'll just flow to the bottom line. Your profits will be much higher versus you can do anything and make it look better. The problem is if you build your whole team around 50% and you only grow 30%, then you're probably going to lose money.
Welcome to the Learn It All podcast with your hosts, Learn It CEO, Damon Lemby, and SVP of Product, Darren Bridget. Our mission is to explore how continuous growth shapes the path to success. Our guests are high achievers who've learned there's always something new to discover. They'll share their stories, strategies, and insights with you. So whether you're a budding entrepreneur, a seasoned executive, an aspiring athlete, or simply someone who believes in the lifelong pursuit of knowledge, this podcast is for you. Join us now for the latest episode as we continue the Learn It All's journey through a world that never stops teaching.
Here we are. We're live. Welcome to the Learn It All podcast. We are Damon Lemby, CEO of Learn It, Darren Bridget, VP of Product here at Learn It. And today we are joined by Shane Bender. Shane is an expert. He's a CFO and a financial consultant for multiple small businesses. He's an expert when it comes to this field about finances and small businesses. A few interesting facts about Shane. In 2016, launched Bender CFO Services to help small organizations gain that financial and accounting intelligence to help their strategic growth, get measurable results, ultimately financial success. He's been a controller, a director, a VP of finance in the corporate world. And he has a book, Forecast Your Future, How Small Businesses Exchange Stress and Chaos for Cash and Clarity. Stress and chaos versus cash and clarity. Sounds pretty good to me. Welcome to the show, Shane.
Thanks, Darren and Damon. I definitely appreciate y'all having me on this.
And I want to point out that Shane is our outsourced CFO at Learn It. And I think we worked together for what, 3 years now, 4 years, like that?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, it's been great.
And we're all about learning here. And I've learned a great deal from you, Shane. So I'm thrilled to have you on the show today.
Yeah, I'm excited to be on it.
Well, it's great to have you. For those of you tuning in, what we hope that you'll learn from this show is if you have a small business, if you're an entrepreneur, or if you're thinking about starting a small business, what are some of the things that you should be paying attention to? What are some of the big mistakes you should watch out for when it comes to managing your finances and the financial health of your company? So Shane, I'm going to tee you up with this first question, then we'll get into our signature question. But this first question about you is, how did you arrive at where you're at? Can you tell us a little bit more about starting your business, how you got here, and what you did?
Thanks, Darren. Well, really, with impetus started in May of 2015. I was working as a VP finance for a marketing firm, and the company at that time wasn't growing at the level that would support a full-time financial person. And so they ended up laying me off. And I remember driving home and just thinking, it's just a big pit in my stomach because it's like, I've got four kids, they're ages 4 to 11. And I was the single income in my family. It wasn't much severance really there. And the security of a job was not quite as secure anymore. And me through a journey in 2015, which is probably I had to go through that journey for me to even survive entrepreneurship and starting a business. So after that, I spent some time at Edward Jones. I was like, okay, I'm going to do something different because I had spent my previous 15 years doing finance and accounting corporate type situation. I completely switched to doing like financial advising, like investments and stuff. I don't know if anybody know about Edward Jones, but at the time they're like, I'm sitting here with an MBA from Baylor and you need to go get your suit on and go door to door and knock on these doors at 95 degrees in Texas in September. And that's what I did. I mean, I passed all the tests and did all that. And I just remember doing this, like, what am I doing? You know, and ultimately I realized that was not really the right fit for me. And so towards the end of 2015, I came across this concept and I really had not heard about it. It's fractional CFO. Like, okay, this is a CFO or financial advisor business, financial advisor for small businesses. I was like, well, this makes a lot of sense. I had worked for businesses that had gone from 4 million and grew really, really fast and had worked in the corporate situation. And it made a lot of sense that you wouldn't want to hire a full-time CFO if you're a small business. When I say small business, I say like 1 to 20 million. You're never going to want to hire that full-time CFO. That would be like tremendous burden. And so I was like, okay, this makes a lot of sense. So I started the firm and I'm like, I had a certain amount of savings in the bank. And I was like, this is going to last me about 6 months. You know, sometimes I tell people the story and I think of how risky it was. And I was like, well, I mean, I knew I could always go back and get a job and do an accounting and finance eventually, you know, but I wanted to see, I do it. And I had to learn a lot. I mean, talk about learn it all. I mean, I was having to learn about business development, had to learn about marketing. I mean, I didn't do that before. All I did was I did accounting and I got my CPA and I did finance and I did the forecast modeling and financial planning and analysis, all the things that I like to do, but nothing had to do with some of the other areas. And so I really had to learn. And ultimately, after about 2-3 months, got my first client and that made my runway go longer. I got second, third. And by the first year, I'd pretty much replaced the income that I was making in the corporate world. So it just took a while and a lot of education. So that's kind of where I am today. And I've been doing this for the last 8 years now for this firm.
Shane, did you also write your book at the same time?
Yeah, well, the book came a few years. So I started the firm in January 2016. And what's interesting about the book is I decided that the way that I learn is I learn by almost reading and educating myself, but then almost journaling and writing about it, notes. Yeah. So I was like, okay, well, how can I kill two birds with one stone? So I would do this like weekly blog. And I'm not a writer either. That's another learning thing. But I just decided to start writing a weekly blog. And it was like, whatever I wanted to educate myself on, whatever that topic was, I'm going to write about. So that occurred. And if you go to my website, vendorcfo.com. Actually, I don't know if we have the blogs going back to 2016 on there. We may. But it was just a ton back in those first few years. And so around 2017 to early 18, I decided to put it in a book and kind of organize them around a certain framework. And so that's the book published in the late 2018.
I just want to say, Shane, for our listeners especially, there's a couple things in there. One is I love how you shared how you go about learning and retaining. That's awesome. That's a great takeaway right there. The other thing that you brought up that I've seen others do, and I want to get to do more myself too, is you write down all this stuff and you have journaling and you have blogs and then converting that. Now more than ever, it's easy to convert something into an ebook and publish it. So for all you out there listening, and then for ourselves too, Darren, what a great tip that was. So thanks for sharing, Shane.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I appreciate it.
I doubled down on that. That's amazing. Because there's so much research to suggest that this is how you learn. You have to take what you learned and you have to put it in your own words in order for you to start to retain it. That's one level of learning. But for you to turn that into a book is taking it to a whole other level.
Yeah, I obviously had to still have my business and new clients. So I've always been big on consistency. Mm-hmm. And so I would just do a little bit each day, typically earlier in the morning. So I didn't spend the whole day. I know some people go write a book and they go rent a place somewhere for a week and just write. And that wasn't me. I had to just do a little bit each day. I'm going to spend a little bit more time on Saturdays and kind of wrap it up.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing. I know that we're talking about getting into the kinds of things that you should pay attention to if you're running a small business. So let's pivot over to that. And Damon, I know you've been especially excited for this podcast because this is one of those things that you pay attention to all the time. Why don't I pass it over to you to ask some of those questions?
So before we even get into the financial questions, Shane, my question is for somebody out there who either wants to change careers and make a big leap, take a risk like you did, or start your own business, what's the first thing that they should do?
Well, you know, it's going to be kind of funny. I don't think that the first thing has to do exactly about finances. It's actually more about your mindset. I actually learn a lot about is what is going on in your head and your limiting beliefs around things and how do you reframe some things. So like if you're wanting to start, and for me, I had to actually dive in with not much of a backup plan. I think that sometimes people are like, want to have all these backup plans, but you really have to go all in. I know you say that in your book, but you have to go all in. And I mean, you can't be like, oh, I'm going to dabble in this and then like just always think that you're going to go back to this other thing. Now, you want to be smart and not like go into big debt or anything. But at the end of the day, you really have to mentally believe you can do this and put that mindset in place. That's kind of the first step. I mean, after that, you sort of have to have a plan. And obviously, part of your business plan is related to the finances. You know, how are you going to get your customers? What's the way you're going to earn your revenue? The people around that, hiring contractors, ultimately, your business development process. So all of that's part of your business plan. And then what we do and what I like to do is put that into numerical forecast planning to help you see, does that actually make sense? At what point in time are you going to start making money? Or, you know, how much cash do you need to get this started? When would you potentially run out? Or how are you going to get it financed? I mean, it depends on the size of your business. Now, my business, being a service-oriented business, didn't require a lot of capital up front. I mean, I just needed enough money to pay basically my own bills in my own life. But obviously, if you've got a business that needs equipment and you need inventory, that's a different type of capital structure. So you have to kind of think about all that.
So Shane, I got a question for you. So one thing, Darren and I talk about this a lot. One thing I love with Learn It is not only am I running, leading a small business, but we work with hundreds of different organizations of all sizes. And so we kind of get to see behind the curtain how they lead and how they manage and set vision and everything. Now you get to do something very similar with your customers on the finance side, right? On the accounting finance side. So my question to you is a two-pronged question. Share with us one or two of the biggest mistakes that you see companies, customers, or potential customers making on the financial side, and then share one or two things that customers, best practices that you've seen them do as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I mean, mistakes, especially in smaller businesses, I mean, I guess happens at all sizes. But the biggest mistake that I see is they just don't even really know where they're at right now. And so like sometimes, especially with smaller businesses, they're just kind of making all these decisions by gut. And so they might not even have financials. I see it all the time. It's like, I was actually just got a client this week. I was looking at it and looking at the client and the financials were not good enough to really do a lot of numbers. There needs to be some more work on there. So some of that's just, they don't have the financials in place. And sometimes they'll make the mistake of thinking anybody can do that, when in reality, people go to school for years and they get educated on this. So you definitely don't want to make the mistake that anybody can do it. Now, obviously, anybody can learn and educate themselves, but you don't want to be like, oh, I'm just going to like give this to somebody that can just watch maybe one YouTube video and here we go, let's do accounting. So there is some education involved. But like another thing is, and this is probably what you'll see when someone's a little bit more mature, they just don't really understand how they're making the margins and what they're making. Like they might not know, for example, that they're losing money in some area or with a specific client or a specific product. So they may just not have a lot of clarity around that. And so we do that through our forecast modeling and our analysis to kind of understand a little bit more about where are they more or less profitable. And so that feeds a lot of discussions. That feeds pricing discussions. It feeds efficiency discussions. It might be feeding discussion on whether we even do that service altogether, all those types of things. I mean, there's so many different things. Obviously, cash flow is another factor, but it's all interrelated. Whether your cash is going up affects your revenue and how you're currently billing and collecting. There's so many variables in cash. So usually when we're doing working with a client, we're understanding all the components, starting with revenue and expenses, but then it leads us into the cash flow discussion so that then we can know better. And so to answer your question on what clients do well, obviously when clients, first of all, they have good accounting, and they have a good forecast and they actually look at how they're doing compared to what they expect that they're doing. So every month or every regular that the executive team and the management is looking at, okay, well, this is how the month went. This is our revenue and our expenses, our profit. And this is what we expected it to be. And here's the difference. And why was there a difference? And what are we going to do about it? And making those adjustments. When those types of clients are in much better shape to adjust and assess and adjust and make adjustments earlier before it's too late.
That's a great answer. Well, let me start with this version. Let's say that you're in Texas there and you want to start a taco truck, start a new business, fall in love with it. It's like, I love making tacos. I'm going to get myself a taco truck, go to Dallas. I know everybody loves food trucks. There's a leap of faith a little bit with jumping into something. Like there's always going to be some of that. But what's the right balance? Because I think it's easy for people to go online and like, fill out a little business plan and think, okay, I've done my job, because you can't become an expert in finances before you start. You need enough so that if you go into that business, you're not going to start wrong and you'll be able to transition into, okay, we got to get a little bit more serious about managing our margins and knowing what the forecasts are because it looks like this could work. Like, what's the right balance there of educating yourself? And when do you really need to start paying attention? Maybe it's right away. Maybe I'm mistaken. Story there.
Well, I mean, obviously, part of the reason why I wrote the book, Forecast Your Future, is to provide some education for somebody that's it could be starting a business, obviously, or they had a business for a while. It's meant to provide some education. I think it also helps you know what you don't know. You're like, oh, wait, there's all this that I'm supposed to know. And so at some point in time, and I can't tell you if I would advise somebody with a taco truck, depends on how much cash flow they have, but obviously you want to get a good accountant or CPA or somebody up front. Now, I usually don't recommend the CFO services. I mean, at some point in time, I'd love to believe I can help everybody, but there is a point where it's like, you gotta be a certain size where it makes a lot of sense. But you need to get yourself a good accountant, bookkeeper, somebody, whatever you can afford to watch that stuff, set up your QuickBooks and get something, get an accounting system. Don't try to do this by pen and paper. And I mean, it's not that hard. The accounting systems these days are online and not too inexpensive. So get that going. Make sure you set up your entity correctly. Maybe you need to talk with an attorney. I always recommend an LLC or S-Corp for, I might be going too much into details or something, but for tax purposes, you can get that set up right so that you can have your good plan. Because you're wanting this to grow. I'm assuming if you're doing this example of a taco truck, you want this to be your income. And I don't know, having a plan and knowing where you're going to be 1-2 years, are you trying to grow this to multiple trucks? Do you want a restaurant one day? I don't know what your ultimate plan is. Or is this a side business where you're just doing this on the weekend and you're still working your full-time job? Obviously, those make a difference here on what I might recommend you do. That makes sense.
Education. Yeah, that's good. One follow-up question, because I was thinking about as you're going through this, and this can apply whether you have a taco truck or a giant business, really, which is you can read the financials. We do it every week at Learn It. But it's trying to deduce why. When your forecast doesn't match up with the reality and getting into why, that's such a challenging place. What do you see with your small business customers and any recommendations on that part? Like forecast isn't matching. How do you try to figure out what the problem is? Do you have any recommendations for folks?
Well, the first step is just creating that. You have to start creating that forecast and you'll get better at it over time. And that's why I have a whole section in the book about assess and adjust. And that's pretty much what we do on our regular meetings is we're looking at this is what actually happened. And if there's a variance, then we forecast every single month. We revise it every single month. So basically a month ago, we thought it was this and we were off. And why couldn't we have figured it out just a month ago? And so then that would have been like just assessing that and understanding it. I have another marketing company. I've worked with some marketing companies. And as I mentioned before, I spent in the corporate world about 9-10 years working with marketing agencies. So from 2005, ultimately that company, I was a controller there for a while, and then they got acquired and became part of a large, actually publicly traded company out of the UK and started doing kind of financial planning and analysis there. And you talk about, that's all we were doing is just analyzing variances of this and variances of that and splicing and dicing. And ultimately, after 9 years, I left that company. So what we would pretty much do regularly is just break that down. It's like, okay, well, if it's a revenue variance. And so now, as I was mentioning when I first started, it's like I have a marketing agency that I've been working with for 6 years, happens to be somebody that used to work with the company that I, back in 2005, he went and started his own company and his company's grown really well. But we would do the analysis for the revenue and be like, how in the world did we think a few weeks ago that the revenue was going to be 500,000 and it was 400,000? Like, how could we be off 100,000? This is the weekend. And sometimes it was in the middle of the month when we forecast. It'd be like, it's February, what's the 9th? And you do a forecast on, say you do a forecast on February 16th for the month of February and you're off. You know, you're like, you're in the month. And that happened. And so you try to break it down by client, like, well, what do we do? What's wrong? Why did we not understand that? And ultimately, you definitely improves your forecasting because you figure it out piece by piece. And the same with expenses. Expenses, I find that expenses are a little bit easier after a while. I mean, for the most part, you can start to see the trends. I mean, you know all the people that you have on payroll, you know what your monthly contractor expenses are. So that gets a little bit easier. It's the revenue and the margins, gross margins, that can be a little bit more difficult. And we spend a lot of time on analyzing.
So it sounds like what's important here is it's great that you have numbers, right? You look at the numbers. But what Darren says, it's more important than that is like, well, what are you going to do with this now that you know that? And it sounds like what you're saying, Shane, is that whether you're a small business owner or a middle manager responsible for a P&L, is that you got to get curious, right? You got to get curious and be open-minded and really looking at what you thought was going to happen and then understanding what the gap is and what really did happen and kind of learning from that and trying to adjust as we work together. It's getting curious, it's asking really good questions and be able to take feedback saying, hey, we thought this was going to happen, but it didn't. And I know I think one of the great things about small business owners is they get really excited and sometimes they're super positive. But I think when it comes to forecasting and budgeting, you also have to be realistic too, right? Wouldn't you say, as far as how things work?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, we can always do lots of different scenarios. I mean, obviously, I like the premise of having a realistic budget for your revenue and expenses so that you're hiring and making decisions on an expense side on a more realistic view. If you can give your sales team much higher targets, I mean, you don't have to give your sales team the targets of the realistic budget. You give them higher ones. And if you hit those numbers, then it'll just flow to the bottom line. Your profits will be much higher versus there is a methodology of where you can do anything and make it look better if you have more revenue. If you just plug that number in there, you can make yourself look the most profitable. I'm going to have 50% growth this year. And the problem is that if you build your whole team around 50% and you only grow 30%, then you're probably going to lose money, which is 30% growth is not bad in most situations, but usually people will be patting themselves on the back for 30% revenue growth, but not if your expenses went up 50%. So you have to kind of taper that expense growth in a way that's reasonable. And then you can always adjust. And that's why we talk about doing this regularly. I don't agree with the philosophy of creating a budget or a forecast in December or January and just that's it. You don't look at it all year. You're looking at all throughout the year. Every single month, you're doing an analysis and what do we need to adjust here? And if your revenue is starting to do better, well, that's great. And, you know, maybe there's some metrics that you can look at for when you need to start hiring somebody. One of the metrics I like to look at is your revenue per person, you know, so per account person. If that starts to go up, then you may need to hire somebody. I mean, it depends on the industry and all these things.
So if I got this right, this seems like a really important idea. There's a difference between forecast and goals. You could have goals that you set for the year and you hold on to them all year, but you're going to keep adjusting your forecast because if you don't, you're going to mismanage your expenses.
Yeah,
good. And then the follow-up question that I had around the forecasting was, is it always backward looking for you? Like historically, here's what we've seen. And in that sort of Bayesian thinking way, like how do you update information? Do you sometimes look out and say, let's say it's my taco truck thing. It's like, well, there's always been a giant festival around this time of year, but I think this year it's not going to be that way because of the flood that we think is projected to happen. Like, do you account for what you think you see coming in the near term where you can have a little bit of accuracy around forecasting? Or is it always just backward looking historically? This is what's happened. So this is what we're forecasting.
Well, I mean, I'm not too backward looking. I actually started my career out of Baylor. The first 2 years I was an auditor and I would spend basically go back into the last year and it was all about historical information. And I use some of that today. I left after about 2 years and ultimately went into industry. And what I think is more important when, so a lot about revenue, this is really about how do you forecast your revenue? So if it's a service oriented business, such as Learned or anything, you're going to take an understanding of what's the current existing revenue that you have. You know, what are your current agreements in place? You should have an understanding of where your run rate or where you're headed, you know, as far as your current agreements and what people are typically, whether you have a contract or they regularly purchase at that revenue level. And then after that, you're trying to understand identified prospects. So most businesses, I mean, this would be a very good thing to have as a good kind of CRM tool. Salesforce, HubSpot, there's so many of them out there, Zoho, some kind of tool to understand what's in the pipeline of opportunities and effectively build that into the forecast, prorate them. I actually have a whole, this is also in the book, as far as how you can kind of break that out between different probabilities. But ultimately, you need to have some kind of pipeline. If you don't have a pipeline, then that's a red flag. Okay, well, we obviously need to do a little bit more marketing and business development if your pipeline's small, but then you put a prorated portion of that in there and that helps you trend where you think you're headed. I mean, the rest of it's kind of like unidentified. I mean, if you have a goal to hit 5 million this year and your run rate revenue is 3 million and your identified opportunities is 1 million, then mathematically you have a $1 million plug that you don't know where it's coming from. And is that the right number? And then that would be the question. It's like, can you find $1 million that you don't know about today? Is that enough? Do we have enough time this year? Those are the kinds of how things that we do to break down revenue to see if it's reasonable going forward.
Yeah.
Shane, to switch gears, one thing that I think is most important, my dad, the founder of Learned, Walt Lemby, would always say, cash is king. Without cash, you're out. And I see, especially during Learned, it's been through multiple through the dot-com bust, through the Great Recession, through the beginning of COVID. And I really learned, you know, sometimes the hard way on how to manage cash and how to manage your accounts receivable. But during uncertain times, especially, what recommendations can you give to business owners about managing their cash, their AR, that could benefit them?
Yes. I mean, I totally agree. Cash is king. And obviously, when you run out of cash, you probably are out of business. And so there's so many different things you can do. I mean, sometimes it's as simple as just having good treasury management around the cash. And these days, it's been more about, is your cash even earning interest? We've had that happen a lot. That's something that's been discussed a lot in the last 12 months. Obviously, your billing process and looking at accounts receivable and collecting, looking at that regularly is hugely important. You're making sure you're billing in the course of contracts. Your payables process, making sure that you want to pay people when it's due. You don't need to pay them before it's due. Effectively, it's accounting 101, and many business owners don't have that. And that's why you bring somebody on your team, an accountant or bookkeeper, to help you with that. But that will tremendously help your cash flow. Now, if you're in a cash crunch situation, we, with clients, will do, sometimes we'll have to break it out by week and look at cash flow on a weekly standpoint out a few weeks and see what it looks like. Now, we want to get to a point where you're not weekly on cash. You don't want to be week to week. So how do you grow your business to a point where you have some runway there for things to go up or down, and just building that in place? And sometimes that requires a line of credit to be in place. In the last few years, one of the biggest changes that we've experienced since COVID is that there was so much cash being brought into the economy through the PPP and the retention credit still happening. And there's the SBA loans really prevalent, and all that was influxing so much cash into the economy. And then that's sort of starting to dry up. I mean, people still trying to get retention money, but the other interest rates have risen, inflation's higher. And so all of that is meaning that sometimes when you have too much cash, if you aren't doing the things we talked about already, you may actually think you're doing better than you are because you just look at the bank account, which is dangerous to just manage your business by the bank account, because you may be either patting yourself on the back. Really, the reason why you have so much cash is just you financed it or whatever. There's so many reasons.
Or you're not using
it. Yeah, you're not. Well, yeah, that's another thing is, like, do you use it and put it into the business and help it grow? There's so many methods there with cash. But like nowadays, because of the cash from the government drying up, I've seen more and more where businesses are now realizing, oh, we got to actually monitor this a lot closer. We got to cut expenses. You know, wait, we got to cut expenses. I mean, sometimes you have to make those decisions to get the margins right.
I think my recommendation that I always give business owners is, one, and you mentioned this, Shane, is be really focused on your accounts receivable. What's your average turnaround time? Is your goal net 30? And B, you know, we've been burnt over the years a long, long time ago by extending that and companies not paying. So you got to be on top of your accounts receivable. And I think also it's important with your vendors, have a good relationship, pay on time, but don't be afraid to negotiate payment terms. Those are some tricks right there. And I also, another thing that I've learned over the years is to utilize a credit card, but do your best to pay the credit card off monthly so you don't incur
or definitely do that.
Use it and pay it off. So those are just a couple tricks that I've seen as well.
Yeah. Those are all perfect. And I mean, so much starts with billing and collections. I mean, I don't know how many times I go in a small business and they're not even billing regularly or something like that, or not billing correctly. And just to have somebody do the AR, download it to Excel, and put notes next to each item on why, if it's past due, there should be an action plan. Like, okay, well, if you send an email to them, maybe they didn't even get the invoice. I mean, you'd be surprised how many times, especially when they're emailed, they didn't even get it. And so just having a process of saying, hey, did you get this invoice? So you haven't paid. And then ultimately, as it gets older, you have to ask, you know, somebody's got to call them, or you got to talk to somebody on that side to be like, oh, hey, what's going on here? But just regularly looking at that each couple times a month, at least once a month, is hugely important.
Yeah, I see too many small business owners who don't pay enough attention to it at all. They just think it's going to happen. And I think just carving out time and blocking time to go through your AR with your accountant, or whatever you're doing before it's too late, being proactive on that.
I feel pretty inspired to want to be a little more financially literate after this conversation. I mean, I think I got P&L down in terms of what it stands for, but EBITDA, I still don't know. If you're advising somebody in terms of who wants to increase their financial literacy just as part of their overall business acumen. And recognizing that this could be years of intense study, but you also can't think that you're going to get financially literate in like a week. What's a good place for people to like turn and start building their financial literacy? And like, how much should you invest? How much time and effort to feel like you've got a good enough understanding that you can head out into the world with a small business?
I would suggest anybody, I mean, there's a number of different places out there, courses or any education on finance for non-financial people or something of that nature that they can educate themselves on just understanding what's on the profit and loss statement, what's on the balance sheet, what's a cash flow statement. Those types of things are hugely important. If you're a business owner wanting to start a business, definitely getting somebody to help you too is important. But understand it. Don't just abdicate this somebody else to do it. Understand what's happening. Sometimes I'll talk with business owners and then just understanding what gross margin and operating margin is and this difference. And I personally try to tell them and educate that in the process so they know what those metrics are.
I want to piggyback on what you just said there is, yeah, sure. There's a lot of books out there, finance for non-financial people. There's courses, all of that. What I've tried to do over the years, and when you work with somebody like Shane, and for small business owners, now that you could hire people virtually and you don't have to have a full-time person, that's why I love having an outsourced accountant or in Shane's situation, CFO. But I really use it and I highly recommend it as learning in the flow and using it as an opportunity to learn, again, get curious and ask questions. Shane and I, we have our monthly meeting and I've done this for years with other accounts too. It's just asking questions, not being afraid to ask dumb questions, but actually learning along the way, because that could be a great learning opportunity as well.
I got one last question, then we'll kind of pivot over into some of those signature questions I mentioned. If somebody gets to that point where they think they're ready to work with the CFO, you know, you're a couple million dollars or more size company, what do you appreciate from customers when they're working with you? What makes your job easier? So in other words, if I want to go hire a CFO, how can I make sure that I'm managing that relationship the best?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I like when business owners are curious and ask questions. And obviously, we want to be able to have regular meetings to go over everything and just be responsive and trying to figure out how to improve. That's the most important thing, because really, my goal is to help small businesses increase their income, ease of operations, and value of their company. That's kind of a real high-level view. And I can't do that in a silo. So it has to be, we're working together, we're collaborating, we're talking about what's going on, what the changes are, and we regularly meet. This day and age, most of my meetings are on Zoom, just screen shares, and here you go, here's the spreadsheet. Different business owners like the details versus others, but as long as we're collaborating and going through, then that's really number one, and
yeah, it works really well. It's not just like, hey, let me hand it to the CFO, you take care of everything, get back to me, but it's a conversation, it's a collaboration, and using that curiosity to help improve the value of the company.
Another thing is, like, when I say collaboration, if there's any financial decision that you're making, sometimes if you feel like it's going to affect the P&L or cash or something, let's talk about it. Like, you know, don't make that decision in a silo. Let's talk about it. Maybe there's some things that I can help with. And so that's what helps too.
You had such a great recommendation around learning and actually like putting it in your own words and carrying it as far as creating your own book, which is great. So when it comes to learning, what are you hoping to learn and get better at over the next 6 months? What's something that you would like to learn and improve?
That's a good question. I think that probably the biggest area, and it's a real broad subject matter, is just how can I lead better? And I know that's broad. And the thing is that what I'm finding now, I have a small team and I also have teenage boys, and there's so many different variables for leadership. And it's not about just telling somebody something. It's asking the right questions and really understanding their viewpoint. And I'm starting this book called The Communication Code.
Yeah.
Called Jeremy Kubitschek. Anyway, Communication Code. It's on Amazon. And, you know, it talks about the different ways you communicate. If you're communicating this way and this person communicating that way, then you're not communicating. And it's just, that's all part of leadership. If somebody's trying to communicate something that they're celebrating, hey, I got this, then you start critiquing them. That's a total mismatch of communication. Yeah. So that's an example, but I've really been trying to learn a lot better about that. And for me, unfortunately, it is like you read it, and I do a lot of audiobooks. I mean, I just flow through audiobooks like anything. But unfortunately, it goes in and out the ear. You have to sort of apply stuff. I mean, I could say I've done an audiobook every month, but if we don't apply any components of it, It just didn't matter. So,
well, I appreciate that you're interested in leadership. I think that we might be able to get you a deal on a little leadership.
Well, I don't know. Well, I was just going to say, I mean, you might want to call us. We might know somebody, a company could help you with some of your leadership skills.
Yeah. And thumbs up for wanting to improve there. One last question before we pivot over to how people can get in touch with you and Bender CFO Services. People have learned a lot, I'm sure, about you and also about business finance, small business finance. What's one thing that people might be surprised to learn about you? Something that people don't necessarily know about Shane that might be a little surprising. I should have prepared you for that's the toughest question.
What would someone be surprised about? Goodness, that's a good
question.
I'll
give you an example. Our last guest was a gymnast in college and loves fly fishing, two things that people don't often know about Mr. Bartlett.
I mean, I don't know if it's that surprising. It may be surprising to you guys. I don't know if it's surprising to some people I know, but I really like the weather. I like snow. I like to, like, I'll go read forecast discussions about this stuff. I'll go on to the National Weather Service and read about what model said this and model said that. I guess it kind of goes into forecasting, but it's obviously the weather. But I can geek out on that stuff. And I have two teenage boys that geek out on to the next level. So I don't even do it. Sometimes I'm like looking and then I'll find some kind of model. It's like, you know, the North American model said this. I already knew that. They already knew it like 2 days ago.
That's a good one, Shane. I can tell you, I've been here for 5 years and I didn't know that you wanted to be a weather forecaster.
That is a great.
In a different life, I could have probably been a meteorologist. Yeah.
There you go. Good. All right, Shane, how can people get in touch with you?
Well, I mean, bendercfo.com is our website. Tons of information on there. We're on LinkedIn. I mean, Shane Bender. I would say Bender CFO. My email is shane@bendercfoservices.com. But honestly, if you go to the website, you can book a meeting and do all that stuff there. So that's probably the easiest
way. They probably grab your book just on Amazon.
Yeah, the book's on Amazon. There's an audio book. I didn't do the audio on that, though.
That's funny.
It's all on Amazon.
So we can find you on LinkedIn, find your website. We'll make sure to add all that to the episode notes. Shane, you're awesome. Not only as a guest today, but I really appreciate all the work that you've done for Learn It. You've been a great partner with us. So thanks again.
Oh, yeah. Enjoyed working with you and everybody on the team. Great. And thanks for having me on this podcast. It's fun. I like doing it.
Yeah, it was a blast. All right. That's it for our episode. Thanks again, Shane. Thanks, everybody. See you next time.